You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Marine Radio, totally legit. Yeah. You know what we is. So welcome to the house of All Marine Radio on a Friday. Listen to this, man. I just got invited to the Commandant's Change of Command. That's not what they call that thing. Yeah, I kid you not. A few minutes ago. Email pops in. Headquarters Marine Corps Protocol Office. I look. I'm like, what? 2019 Passage of Command. From General Robert B. Neller to Lieutenant General David H. Berger. Yeah. So I think that might mean we're somebody. Yeah. Yeah, it's my house. Anyway, good Friday morning to you. Yeah, how about that? Should I go? I don't know. Come on. Do legit people go? Well, maybe. I got a son who lives back there. I could go see my son. And his fiance. Yeah, boom. So, yeah. What am I doing on that day? So, I don't know. I'll figure it out. But yeah. Little shot in the arm for the old ego, just in case I needed one, which I probably don't, but that's all right. Yeah, anyway, I've been dealing with, I bought a pair of sunglasses on, what's today, Friday? On Tuesday? I lost them on Wednesday. Yeah. I bought a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses for $150. Actually, they were on sale for 20% off, so I got them for $120. And then I think I put them down when I was doing post-traumatic winning at the firm base at the FOB out in the middle of 29 Palms. And then the sun went down, and then when I packed all my shit up, I think I left them. Are you kidding me? Come on. So I've been ripping apart everything I have, everything I had out there, which wasn't much. Then I thought, well, maybe they're in the car. Nah, I'm ripping apart the car. It ain't in my car. So I'm pissed about that. So I sent an email. Hey, man, by chance, anybody find my sunglasses? So I'm waiting to hear back. And then today, in fact, I'm recording this right now. Because when you hear it, which will be in an hour and 53 minutes, I will be down at Camp Pendleton getting ready to do post-traumatic winning for the third time this week. Boom. And then over to Yuma on Monday or Tuesday, one of the two, I can't remember, to do it again. So, and you know what? I'll tell you this. Like most things, it gets better and better the more I do it. You know, one of the things I've kind of been able to weave through it is, you know, one of the things I say in life is, what makes the Marine Corps different is the people, right? And yeah, we want to think our training's better and all the rest of it, but that's not what makes the Marine Corps different. What makes the Marine Corps different is the people that respond to the marketing. Right? The few, the proud, the Marines, maybe you can be one of us, we're better, we're tougher, we're rougher, right? All of that. And so, the people that look at that and say, yeah, that's for me, that's, they're different. And so really, what post-traumatic winning tries to do is seize on that. The thing that brought you through door number four, so all of us that joined, we rejected serving, right, with the smart people. We rejected that idea. Yeah, we don't want to do that. And then we looked at the let's go see the world group, and we said, yeah, well, we'd like to see the world, but not like that. And then we had two other choices. This one's pretty reasonable. This one's not. Narcissistic, crazy, right? Who needs it? Yeah, that's the one I want. Right? So honestly, that. And again, think about when you make that decision, when you're young, you don't know a whole lot. Maybe if you grew up in it, you do. That's a pretty small percentage. Other people are looking at it from the outside in. They don't know a whole lot about the internal workings of the Marine Corps or whatnot. They just know what they see. They know what the marketing is, and that's what they come looking for. That's a cool group to be a part of. That's a cool group to be a part of. And so, really, when you look at that group and say, look, if you could come into this, and if you could go through that, and if you could stay in and you can do this, like, what can't you do with that DNA? So this whole narrative of, you know, the veteran victim, yeah, and that may apply to some, but it doesn't apply to us. If you approach whatever you're trying to do with the same amount of enthusiasm and intensity, with that same chip on your shoulder, there's nothing you can't do. Right? Just get after it. And I don't care if it's transitioning out of the United States military, or I don't care if it's tackling mental health issues. If you devote the same intensity, you'll make a difference. And I'm here today to talk about giving you some tools and telling you the truth about what it is. So yeah, no, the post-traumatic winning is better, and without a doubt in my mind. And I've had people who've seen it multiple times have told me that. And which is cool, because I think about it a lot. When I do it, I talk to Marines, I listen to them, the things they say, and then I slowly but surely, you know, I'm better able to articulate what I'm trying to say. You know, for instance, I move something in the presentation. I used to play, to illustrate why you should study trauma, I played a video of John McCain. And the video is him talking about, you know, as they were released. And then he says, you have to realize last 2 years, you know, well, he says, you have to realize I didn't walk right out of solitary confinement. The last 2 years, and I'll put this as a parenthetical, when the North Vietnamese knew they had to give them back, they put them in groups of 50. Well, what did they do in those groups of 50? Well, they sorted things out. And guys who'd been broken, who betrayed other guys, I mean, they didn't feel good about themselves. And then what they heard in response was, don't worry about it, man. They broke me too, and I betrayed everybody just like you did. And so they forgave each other. They listened to each other. They talked about what they did. They transformed each other, right, as they forgave each other and talked through the experience. And in transforming somebody else, guess who they transformed in addition to that? They transformed themselves. So that is really, that's the conclusion. So as opposed to using it, you know what I mean? So as I refine, as I sharpen the pencil, right? As I sharpen the pencil, it's like, no, that really doesn't belong there. It's better suited there because it ties it together. So stuff like that. Anyway, so I'm still not over. It's just a wonderful experience. I got an email yesterday. Hey, you know, CLB-23, I mean, they're out in the field still. Got an email from one of the guys that was there and said, hey, just so you know, the Marines love that. It's all they're talking about today. And we've never seen anything like this, any of us. Which is cool. So hopefully, and then the cool part about it, I've said it before this week, but about doing it with the reserves is that they're going to go back home to communities and hopefully they take that with them and hopefully post-traumatic winning begins to impact communities around the country. So anyway, so that's exciting. I want to talk about the Iranians and the Straits of Hormuz. I had an experience in 1987. So we go over to I'm on an aircraft carrier, and this is back in the day when we didn't go inside the Persian Gulf, and we didn't go inside the Persian Gulf because of the silkworm envelope. The missile was called a silkworm. It was a surface-to-surface missile. It was an anti-ship missile. And so we did not go in the Persian Gulf until many years later. And so we would go, and we would exist. Now, at the time, the USS Stark had been shot by the Iraqi Air Force, and the Iraqi Air Force mistook it evidently for an Iranian frigate, and so that had just happened. So we began to escort Kuwaiti oil tankers. Remember the whole reflagged Kuwaiti oil tanker thing? Well, we were flying combat air patrol over the top of it, so we would have to go into the Gulf of Oman, sail towards the Straits of Hormuz. So we would be in that general vicinity at the kind of the southwestern along the southern border of Iran. Right? So you're up in the Gulf of Oman. All right. And that's where you are. Anyway, so one night we're doing what we do, which is we're launching and recovering airplanes. We're at general quarters because we're within 100 miles of the Iranian coast. And all of a sudden, over the radio, one of our special helicopters that's inside on the far side of the Straits of Hormuz. Right, where there's a whole series of islands, and then they had oil platforms too, and they were running their navy boats, were doing shit, and we had caught them dumping mines in international waters. And the helicopter pilot says, "You, this is me. I'm observing an Iranian LCU, which is a landing craft, placing mines in international water." And with that, everybody just stopped. And you heard the call back to them. And they're having this conversation back and forth. And then you hear request permission to engage. Snap. And then you heard standby. Because just like, I mean, look, I mean, you, for everybody who's seen it, right, the drone footage of the Iranian Navy, right, yanking out a mine that had been, that had yet to explode, because we can't leave that kind of forensics evidence, so we're going to go get it. And so, if you go just do a search on what a Lippitt mine is, so you'll see a variety of pictures, and you'll see how they work. So, you know, supposedly the Iranians were trying to recover one of their Lippitt mines that was on the hull of the ship, all right? And so we will watch as this unfolds, okay? And so it's just, again, it's just Iran obviously being affected by the sanctions and clearly trying to up the issue. So the next question is, okay, so now what? Now what? Right, do you want to go do that rodeo? And at some point, the United States Navy is going to have to take on the Iranians. Now, you know, the Iranians, if they're begging for that, right, what kind of missiles do they have that can affect our Navy ships in the region, right? And do we have submarines that are in the region? So it's going to be very interesting to watch how the United States deploys our military power to confront the Iranians. But, I mean, it was very interesting. And so we, that night, we engaged that LCU and blew it up. And then the following night, we sailed 23 warships, all of our escorts. We did not go. We stayed in the Gulf of Oman, right? And which is the area that we were working. We stayed in the Gulf of Oman. You know, our aircraft went north, essentially northwest. And, but every one of our escorts, along with other escorts in the area, they went through the Straits of Hormuz. And I remember the Admiral getting on the 1MC. And, that's the PA system. And, he wasn't the CO of the ship, is the captain, right? Don Baird was our CO, but, the Admiral was a guy named Tony Less. And I had dinner with him one night. But anyway, Admiral Less, he gets on the 1MC to talk to, you know, the ship, and, which he never did, because it's not his ship. He's just a kind of a tenant. His headquarters is there. So, he's in charge of the whole battle group. So Admiral Less gets on and says, all right, here's what's going on tonight. We're going to sail, you know, every frigate and destroyer we have right through the Straits of Hormuz. If they light off a weapons radar, we'll destroy it. Most of the aircraft, right, in the battle group from the Ranger will be in the sky tonight. And if the Iranians want to start a fight, it'll start tonight. And you're sitting there listening going, holy shit. And he said, we're going to sail our frigates and destroyers through the Straits of Hormuz. And I can't remember if the USS Long Beach went with them. The USS Long Beach might have gone. It was USS Long Beach, a cruiser. And we're going to destroy the platforms that they're working out of. And so the next day, you know, I can't remember how many rounds they shot. They shot a shitload of ammunition on the different platforms the Iranians had used and then had since run away from when they saw us moving north. And the Iranians, they didn't light off a weapons radar. They didn't do anything. So same region, what, 30 years later, 32 years later? It was my first really, you know, contingent, real world, no shit. Hey, man. This is what's going on. And so, so again, same region, same stupid games. Iran does not have the military. And look, what they do best is the whole proxy thing that they've been doing, right? Is, you know, is being a shit disturber in a different part of the world. So, to me, what you do is you say, no, we'll take you on here. Because they won't do it well. They won't do it well. So, anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And again, this stuff on videotape is stupid. Right? The stuff on videotape is stupid. So, anyway, good. I watched the NBA game last night. It was awesome. I've become a Kawhi Leonard fan. Guy's all about business, right? All about business. Anyway, I didn't know too much about him other than I knew he went to San Diego State. I have a good friend of mine who's a football coach there, and he was telling me what a great basketball player he was. And this is years ago. But watched the basketball game last night, hockey game the night before. I didn't get a chance to watch that because I was out doing my thing. But listened to the interviews, and so we'll have the chef on. And today we recorded it last night before the basketball game because we were hoping for a game seven, and you'll hear us talking about that because game sevens are cool. And but. Lakers, the Golden State Warriors, championship pedigree. I'll say that for them. They lose by what, 3 points last night? And they lost Klay Thompson. They had lost Kevin Durant already. And they went down brawling like a champion does, even given all of that. And came very close to forcing game seven. So it was great. It was great entertainment. And then in the presentation afterwards, Bill Russell, with the MVP award is named after Bill Russell. Okay. They said this is last night was the, I don't know, 40th anniversary of the 11th championship that Bill Russell won. I don't know how many he won in total, but Bill Russell is one of the most amazing athletes you've ever heard of in your life. Let me just find out. And so Bill Russell's up there, and he was wheeled out. Actually, at the end of the game, they're watching. You're watching Seth Curry, right, who's a pretty good basketball player. You're watching him go through the tunnel area towards the Warrior locker room, and you see him pass by somebody in a wheelchair who's getting pushed on towards the court. And Seth Curry walks past this guy, and then he stops, and he goes back, and he shakes hands, and he talks to him, and it's Bill Russell. And you're thinking, you know what? Seth Curry got raised right, right? Clearly, obviously disappointed that he lost, but the grace and the respect to stop and to go back and say a few words to one of the great basketball players of all time, and that is Bill Russell. Bill Russell, he's 85, born in Monroe, Louisiana, in 1934. 6'10", 220 pounds. Went to high school in Oakland, California, and then went to college at the University of San Francisco. He was the second pick overall. Who the hell was the first? He was selected by the St. Louis Hawks. Played from 1956 to 1969. Wore number 6 for the Celtics. And then he coached. Then he coached. So listen to this. As a player, he's an NBA champion 11 times in 1957 and then every year from 59 to 66. And then 68 and then 69. 5 times the NBA most valuable player. 12 times an NBA All-Star. Yeah, he's just, he's un, you know, unbelievable. Two-time NCAA champion, 1955-1956. I mean, he's pretty much the man. And then as a coach, he wins as a player coach in 1968 and 1969. He's player coach of the Celtics. He's a smart, articulate guy. And he is tied with Henri Richard of the Montreal Canadiens for the most championships ever won by an athlete in a North American sport. Now, I want to say Frank Crosetti with the Yankees. He was a coach. I thought he won. Frankie Crosetti. He spent his whole 70-year Major League career playing with the New York Yankees before becoming a coach. As a player and third base coach, Crosetti was part of 17 World Championship teams and participated in the World Series 23 times, the most of any individual ever. Yeah, so I don't know who did that. But again, so again, as a player and as a coach, 17 World Championship, 17 World Championship rings. Is that crazy or what? So, anyway, so yeah, no, the NBA last night was very entertaining. Right? And I'm not that much of an NBA fan, but I would certainly give it up for the National Basketball Association last night. I spent the night last night working on a script for Post-Traumatic Winning, tweaking it a little bit, and make sure the presentation was good after doing it here, what, four times in a week. And so looking forward to later on this morning going down and being part of a PME day that the 5th Marine Regiment is putting on. And interestingly enough, the new commanding officer of the 5th Marine Regiment, I met in Ramadi in 2004. He was a first lieutenant. My friend Paul Kennedy, who I've been friends with since about 1990, when we taught together at the basic school, I'm working for General Mattis. Kennedy calls over and says, "Hey, buddy, you want to go on a raid tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, if I can. I have to ask my parents if I can go." Because I didn't have a job that I could just leave. And so I asked Colonel Dunford. I said, "Hey, sir, if Lieutenant Colonel Kennedy comes over and gets me, do you care if I go on a raid with him tonight?" He goes, "No." He goes, "No." He goes, "Can I go?" I said, "No, you can't go." So, no, he said, "Yeah." He said, "But how long are you going to be gone?" I said, I'll come back in the morning." And he said, "All right." He said, "Just be back before noon." I said, "Yes, sir." So, Kennedy, we go downtown to the police station, which was scary as hell. And because all the Iraqis are standing around, and you knew they were fighting for the bad guys. And so anyway, but then after that, we left the police chief and we go to watch a raid that First Lieutenant Rob Weiler and the Marines from Weapons Company, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines are going to conduct. And they had female Marines acting in the role. I want to say it was one of the first times it happened. As what would come to be known as the Lioness Program, where you had female Marines that would work with the women and children, and so you wouldn't do anything culturally inappropriate. So he's taken over the 5th Marine Regiment, and so he'll be there today. So get a chance to see him. I actually flew with Rob to Afghanistan in 2010. So, I mean, and that's not a short plane flight either. So we spent a day sitting on a plane together and shooting the shit. And he's a good man. And we'll take over one of the storied regiments in the history of the United States Marine Corps, the 5th Marine Regiment, the regiment that I joined 35 years ago. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that this morning laying in bed. I joined the 5th Marine Regiment 35 years ago in September. after I had completed the infantry officer course. And my regimental commander was a guy named Marty Brantner. He's one of two Marines that's been, was the recipient of the Navy Cross twice in the Vietnam War. And he, and they happened in the space of a week. Yeah. They happened in the space of a week. And he just passed away here not too long ago. But he was, I told the story here recently, but, you know, we're, as lieutenants, you know, all these guys, when I was a lieutenant, I mean, anybody who was a relatively senior captain, if you were a junior captain, you probably didn't get to Vietnam. But if you were a senior captain, major, lieutenant, and everybody above, I mean, they were all Vietnam guys. And so Colonel Brantner was my regimental commander. He had a whole bunch of his calf, I want to say on his right leg, and part of his thigh gone. And so you'd see him running. It's like this like hobble run that he used to do around Margarita, where the 5th Marine Regiment was billeted at the time. It's since moved to Camp San Mateo. But back in the old Corps, it was at Camp Margarita, right in the center of Camp Pendleton. And he'd be running around, and you'd see him, like, hey, sir, and then you'd check out his leg. They were tough guys, though. And I'll read you the synopsis. The first Navy Cross, on September 3rd, 1968, Captain Brantner, the commanding officer of Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, was on a reconnaissance mission, a reconnaissance and force mission near Lanphoc Village when his lead platoon triggered an ambush by a North Vietnamese company. As Brantner moved forward to join the fight, an enemy grenade peppered him with shrapnel. Ignoring his injuries, Brantner tossed his own grenade and killed the enemy grenadier. The fight became a short-range grenade duel between Marines and North Vietnamese troops. While directing his men's fire, Brantner sprinted through their positions, scooping up enemy grenades and hurling them back towards the North Vietnamese. When a grenade landed in one fire team's position, Brantner plucked up the explosive and tossed it away. He pushed two of his men to the ground and flung himself atop of them, absorbing the grenade shrapnel in his own flak vest. He then turned his attention back to the growing firefight, consolidated his unit's position, even as he coordinated artillery strikes against the enemy force. Eventually, the enemy melted away and Brantner allowed his wounds to be tended by a corpsman. 8 days later, on September 11th, Brantner and his company were settling into nighttime defensive and ambush positions near the village of Mai Binh, when they were attacked by a battalion-sized force, right? A battalion-sized force. Enemy, so that would have been probably for the NVA, it would have been about 500 soldiers against a company of Marines with probably somewhere between 150 and 200. Enemy mortar and machine gun and rocket fire slammed into the Marines. Brantner moved to an exposed position to better direct fire. He moved from position to position, directing his Marines' fire, reorganizing the defense, and inspiring his men. Seeing the enemy gather for a second push, Brantner called artillery onto the North Vietnamese, with shells landing as close as 200 meters from his own position. Over the next 2 hours, the enemy launched three more attacks and were thrown back, each time with severe losses. Eventually, the North Vietnamese withdrew, leaving 67 dead behind and evacuating an indeterminable number of dead and wounded. Delta Company suffered 1 killed and 14 wounded. He was awarded the Navy Cross for both those actions. So, you know, those are the kind of guys that were around, and as a lieutenant, right, they were tough guys too. I told the story about the kind of guys they were the other night. I don't know why it came to me, but it did. But, you know, the difference in the culture that I got raised in, and the point I was making that I think it's a bigger step for people to join the Marine Corps today because our culture is so unlike the Marine Corps. The culture I grew up in, most of my coaches were all veterans of World War II or Korea. I mean, they're tough guys. And they coached us as tough guys. Right? You didn't act like a baby in front of them. Because they weren't having it. And so, you know, we got taught water discipline. You didn't drink water as often as you could. And in football, your head was a weapon. That's why you have a helmet and a face mask. Right? Because God intended you to smoke somebody with it. And that's why you had to keep your neck straight. Come on. Right? And when we run the play, maybe we'll take a water break. So anyway, I was telling this story to illustrate this. And how, to me, I think it takes more courage today to join the Marine Corps. Because our culture is just so different. And now you say, I want some of that. Well, when I was a kid, it wasn't that different than the culture I grew up in. Especially, I went to Catholic schools, and you know, I had discipline in my life, and there was structure in my life. So the Marine Corps wasn't a big step for me. Today, it's a huge step. And I said, and let me just tell you how tough these guys were. Jack Riley tells a story as he and his mates are doing a movement to contact near Compiègne in 1967. It's hotter than piss, right? Over 100 degrees, right? Over 100% humidity, and they're out of water. Well, they come to a stream, and this is during, I think, the morning, afternoon of the evening that the Battle of Gatlin's Corner takes place. They see a stream, right? They put out security. They fill their canteens. All right, once everybody gets their canteens filled, right, they put halogen tablets in it to purify the water, and they start moving again. And mind you, they had those two green plastic canteens. That's what they used. Or some of them probably had metal canteens. So anyway, they start moving again. They move up the stream, and what do you think they find? Dead bodies in the water. So what do you think they say? The platoon sergeant, put another halogen tablet in that water, boys. Do you think they dumped it out? Nope. Right? And, you know, I told the story the other night, and Marines laughed. But, so no, I'm excited to go down to the place that my first command, 5th Marine Regiment, and be a part of that today. They're PME today. So excited about it. Anyway, Whitney Houston makes this Friday official. Good morning to you. And this is dedicated to United States Navy. Yeah, if you're part of that thing, you better have it strapped on, because us and the Iranians are coming to a theater near you. So good luck to everybody out there. Have your shit, your ass and your brain wired together, and good luck.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller. We do have to win. That's no shit. Like Frankie Corsetti, the Crow. Was in the World Series 23 times. Let's see. He was active from 1932 to 1964. So 32 years in the World Series 23 times. Not in the World Series 9 times. And out of the 23 times, the Yankees win 17 times. 17 World Series rings he had. Yeah, those things. I don't know where they are. They're everywhere. All right, we'll check the weather right now. And we'll check news headline. Currently in Quantico, cloudy in 67. What the hell? Camp Lejeune further to the south. Partly sunny and 71. 29 Palms cooled off a little bit. It was, 89 yesterday? Sunny and 77 right now. Camp Pendleton, clouds in 60. Camp Smith, clear, dark, and 77. Okinawa, cloudy and 78. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, it is sunny and 107. In Afghanistan, in the Helmand province, in Marja, it is sunny and 101. At the home of All Marine Radio, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area, clouds in 63. Headed for a high of 69 today. 71 tomorrow with clouds. And on Sunday, 72. Father's Day. Just a reminder, Father's Day. Think about it. That's right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. We'll check some headlines here on a Friday. And then the chef will join us. And I think we're going to talk about some grilled chicken after we talk about the NBA a little bit, our wishes for the NBA, and the curse of Bill Buckner, which had been turned loose on the people of Boston and the Northeast. Everybody that's a fan of the Red Sox and all things Boston sports. Yeah, you wronged Bill Buckner. He recently passed away. You have a curse to deal with because you treated him poorly. More Ball Marine Radio coming up on a Friday. Next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and hope.
You know, Peyton Davis is supposed to record the national anthem for me. Have not heard from that girl in a while, so she's gonna get yoked up here.
I'm gonna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah.
I like her voice. And I like the song. So we're going to listen to it for a few minutes. All right. Much in the news yesterday was two ships that had struck mines. So, if you... What kind of mines were they? Well, you heard the term Lipit mine yesterday, right? Everybody hear that? It's okay to hurt, because if you don't get over it, shit happens. Alright, a Lipit mine is a type of naval mine attached to targets by magnets. It is so named because of its superficial similarity to the Lipit, a type of sea snail that clings tightly to rocks or other hard surfaces. See how that works? A swimmer or diver may attach a mine, which is usually designed with hollow compartments to give the mine a slightly negative buoyancy, making it easier to handle underwater. Usually, Lippitt mines are set off by a time fuse. They may also have anti-handling devices. We hate those. And then you can see a whole series of pictures of different type of Lippitt mines. So that's what a Lippitt mine is. Essentially, magnetic mine, right, attaches to the hull of a ship and then detonates after, you know, after it attaches, right? You could, I'm sure if it has a time fuse, you could manually set it, or there is probably a default automatic setting if you set it to automatic. So, blang, it goes to the hull of the ship, and 10, 15, I don't know, who knows how many minutes later, according to the settings, gaboosh, which is what you saw yesterday. So, that's what the Iranians are doing, allegedly. Let's see if there's any, yeah, here's what doesn't make sense, okay? So, if you look at some of the imagery, a Lippitt mine, right, would hit at the waterline. I'm looking at, on the one ship, it was attacked, it looked like, by a gun of some sorts, because the holes, you know, I heard torpedo, but you look at the holes in the hull, and they're above the waterline. Now, torpedoes, right? Right? Unless they're air-to-ship missiles or surface-to-ship missiles, they tend to hit at the waterline or below. So I'm not exactly sure what the hell's going on, but I know how that shit works. Okay. And so then there's pictures that the United States Navy has of the Iranians trying to recover their Lippitt mine that evidently didn't detonate. Yeah. So anyway, the explanation, which the Iranians are denying. I'm just trying to look at the explanation about the company was being pretty tight-lipped. And you have Angela Merkel, through her spokesman, saying from Berlin today that a spiral of escalation must be avoided. Shut up. Look, you guys don't have a military, so nobody gives a shit what you think. And the only reason you're saying anything, Angela, is to protect your financial position. So, piss off. You don't have a say because you don't have an army. Let me quote Stalin. Are you fearful of what the Pope might say? Chairman, how many divisions does the Pope have? None. Yeah, I don't care what that guy says. Now, I don't normally quote Stalin in matters of state, but there you have it. All right, I'm going to go through the top five stories in Early Bird, and I'll quickly read a headline from Stars and Stripes. I'll read a headline from Marine Corps Times, and then I have someplace to go. So, yeah, that'll be the end of today. And you'll hear the chef who's going to follow us. Stars and Stripes, top story. U.S. releases video. It says shows Iran removing mine. After tanker explosion, Iran denies involvement. Okay. So, again, mines don't go off on the side of the ship. Now, might that be a whole cause? But when you look at the spattering around both holes, it looks like some kind of explosion exterior to the ship that kind of sprayed the exterior of the ship, because you see marks. And so it looks like a shape charge. Now, if it was a Lippitt mine, it would probably not, unless it was attached to that part of the hull by a ship that came up alongside of it and did that, maybe. But I would be curious, right? I would be curious to see how that happened. All right, top headline from Marine Corps Times is, there are no female Marines currently leading infantry platoons in the Corps. Uh-oh. Is that a problem? I guess so. We'll have to change something, because everybody's got a right. Right. In another pretty interesting story, Duncan Hunter, former Marine, his wife pled guilty to a political corruption case and will testify against him for the state. Yikes. Now, Duncan Hunter has been on the program on a few occasions, and he doesn't, honestly, he hasn't said very smart stuff, right? He tried to portray himself as a poor man when he makes $225,000 a year. No crime against being poor. And then he just made the stupid comments he made about Chief Gallagher. So, anyway. Duncan Hunter, I don't know, we'll watch that. It was pretty surprising to see his wife plead guilty and say that she would testify for the state. Top five stories in Early Bird. Obviously, number one, U.S. says Iran took mine off of a tanker. Iran denies involvement. Number two, White House releases update on global counterterrorism efforts. Number three, House panel advances 733 billion defense budget bill over GOP objections. Number four, why would Iran attack two tankers near the Straits of Hormuz? That's in Military Times. Number five, he got life for shooting a Taliban scout who grabbed his gun, supporters say. Now he seeks Trump's pardon. Why does that sound like bullshit to me? Because it probably is bullshit. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back to Shuffle, join us. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Friday right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.